You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, sponsored by flowmax.ie and bar1racing.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your favourite podcast outlets. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, series 4, episode 9 tonight. And once again this week I have got a special guest co-host. He's been waiting for a couple of years for me to ask him onto the show. And tonight he's made the trip, fair play to him, all the way from Navan or Ashburn up here to Newry. And we're recording this together, but socially distant of course. It's lifelong Longford Town fan and the best drummer in the league, Ethan Fitzpatrick. Fitzy, how we doing?
Not too bad, thanks very much, Kieran. I suppose I was just waiting until the money was right.
Yeah,
well, the offer to come in, you know. But no, delighted to get up here now and give it a go. Anyway, big boots to fill. I know you've had a few special guests on, and of course, your partner in crime, John Breyer. But I'll give it my best shot.
Yeah, don't worry, folks. John hasn't been sacked or anything. He will be back soon. We just need to get a few replacements in, and I'm sure Fitz will do a good job tonight. With James Rogers last week, one of the best reporters and journalists in the League of Ireland. But I thought we'd go back to our roots this week with a good fan of the league and just get your thoughts on some of the action. So we're going to review all the results from both the Premier Division and the First Division. Obviously, we'll preview the games coming up this weekend as well. And four great interviews this week, actually. We're going to speak to St. Pat's assistant manager, Alan Matthews. We've got post-match interviews from Darragh Doyle and Gary Cronin after Bray Wanderers' win in Longford last night, and we'll speak to the Cove Ramblers chairman Bill O'Leary. That interview last week with Conor Hoey was very, very popular with listeners, so I thought we'd go behind the scenes of another First Division club this week and speak to Bill down in Cove. But Fitz, let's start with the game that was the first game on the new League of Ireland streaming service. I'll get your thoughts on that shortly as well, but it was Derry 0 Sligo Rovers 2, and a bit of a shock result to restart the league.
Yeah, it was a fantastic result for Sligo. I suppose Sligo were probably a team that were tipped at the start of the year to kind of struggle in the division. I suppose they're always put down as a team that are going to be kind of mid-table. You don't really know what you're going to get with Sligo. But I was speaking to you before, Kieran, I think the signing of Junior from Derry for Sligo is going to be massive for Sligo this year. I think that could really, really spur them on. If they go on a bit of a run now, they could be looking at maybe challenging for one of the lower European spots, in my opinion.
Yeah, the goal scorers were Kyle McFadden and Ronan Coughlin. You might have heard me say on last week's show to James Rogers that Coughlin had been finding a bit of form in the friendlies just before the restart. And if you partner him with Junior and the two of them can hit the ground running, you could be right. Sligo could... A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Sligo being in massive trouble, and now all of a sudden, after this win, they look absolutely fine. Yeah, because if you compare them to where Cork are at the moment, Cork look in big, big trouble. But we'll touch on that after. But I think from a Derry point of view, Declan Devine, he'll be absolutely furious with his team's defending this game. McFadden from a corner, too easy, and then a penalty. A set piece and a penalty. I mean, the manager's going to be pulling his hair out after that.
Yeah, the Brandywell is a stadium that like a lot of teams wouldn't like to go there. On a, you know, like it's a fortress for Derry over the last couple of years. And as you said there, the two goals they gave away, like it was very, very poor defending. But Sligo are the dark horse, I think, for this year anyway.
Yeah, they look, as I said, we were talking about them in huge trouble, and now all of a sudden they look okay. But
it's amazing what one signing can do for positivity around the club.
Yeah, one signing and one win like that. But we'll move on to Shells against Waterford. John Martin with the goal here for the Blues, and a few Waterford players caught your eye, Fitz.
Yeah, I was watching this on the streaming service. I've actually watched probably all the games that have been on it so far, you know. I thought I was very, very impressed by Waterford here. In particular, Matthew Smith, he was a tricky winger for them there. He was dropping short, getting the ball. He was making things happen, you know. He was just adding that little bit of spark that some teams are kind of missing. Mm. And it's just, he was very, very good. And I'm definitely going to butcher this lad's name, but... One of the new signings for Waterford, a defender. I'll let you try and say it.
Subawali.
I was really impressed with him now. He was just so confident on the ball. A lot of times there, he'd bring the winger in on top of him and he'd just skip by him and he'd create a lot of space down that channel. But I don't think Waterford are going to struggle this year now at all.
Yeah, obviously on last week's show, I was a little bit concerned about Waterford because there's been so much chopping and changing during the break. Obviously, change of manager, that was John Sheridan's first game, and players coming in that we didn't know a lot about, like Subawali there. And obviously, they've brought back Curtis Byrne as well to the League of Ireland. That could be a massive sign if he's fully fit and up to speed. I think he probably needed that game the other night.
He probably didn't get enough service. Like he was... he looked very positive up top there, but just from a Waterford point of view, they probably, he probably just wasn't getting the right kind of service for that match. But as you said, like, if them players gel, like, a lot of times clubs bring in these players from different leagues and it's hard to know what you're going to get, but definitely a few of them have hit the ground running already there for Waterford.
Yeah, and it was a great goal from Waterford, a really good team move. But from a Shelbourne point of view, the minute I seen the team sheet, I was really surprised. Jack Brady wasn't playing, Daniel O'Reilly wasn't playing, and Kieran Kilduff obviously was the big one. Now, perhaps I heard comments from Ian Morris saying that he is going to be doing an awful lot of rotating simply because of this jam-packed schedule they have. But what did you make of the team selections?
I don't know if that's your Longford bias coming out there.
There's a few connections there.
Look, I think, look, Shell's on paper, they are a strong side. They're gonna, like, they're not gonna concede too many goals, I don't think. They have good options there. Jack, we personally have seen Jack Brady over the years, a fantastic keeper.
Yeah.
So obviously there's a lot of faith there in their number one. If Jack isn't getting in, you know, there's a bit of fight for positions. But I think the big question mark for Shells, I don't want to be calling any players out here now, but Aaron Dobbs up front, that really shocked me. Look, Aaron was with us Longford obviously last year, like, and he's good at hold up play, but his return rate for goals, I don't think it's just there at Premier Division level. I hope he proves me wrong. I wouldn't like to talk down any players, but from my point of view, there's a big question mark there for Shells and where the goals are going to come from.
I totally agree with you. It's a point I've raised on the show a couple of times. He just didn't do it. He didn't cut it for Longford last season. I thought that when Shell signed him, it was a strange one. You're probably looking at him being a backup to Kilduff. But again, it goes back to perhaps Morris just wanting to rotate, and obviously Kilduff is getting on a bit in years as well. He can't play every game, but I think if Dobbs is your backup option, I think you're going to have issues scoring goals.
I think Shells are going to be ones that are going to be down towards the bottom half of the table, and I think it's real six-pointers for them against the teams that are going to be around them.
Yeah, last week I was mentioning the fact if Shells won this one, they could potentially be eyeing a top four, so it's amazing how...
I definitely disagree with that anyway. Just on the point of view, I suppose I kind of harp on about strikers a good bit, but I don't see where they're going to get the goals from. If they can keep clean sheets, they have half a chance, but I just don't think they have enough firepower there to be challenging.
Well, obviously, just as we're recording here, the game has just ended up in Ballybuffet, and Shelbourne have come out with a 1-0 win tonight with 10 men for, I think, over an hour. Carl Shepherd was sent off. I actually haven't seen who got the winner for them, but that Shells team is really well organised. As you said, they're not going to concede many goals, and for me, that fourth position in the table is really open. Derry are struggling, they're up and down. Pats are up and down. That fourth place could still be there. Now, you're looking at Waterford, perhaps they could perhaps climb up towards it. Sligo, you said, might have ambitions. I think that fourth place is wide open. I wouldn't be writing Shelbourne off as a bottom half team just yet.
Well, if I was a betting man, I wouldn't be putting it on Shells to get that top four spot, in my opinion. But look, we'll agree to disagree on that one.
Yeah.
But a fantastic result for them there, obviously, tonight. Like, in my opinion, it's going to be Shells, Finn Harps, probably Cork in around the mix there for relegation.
You'd put Shells in as a relegation candidate?
Well, down that side of the table.
Oh, I think you've had a clanger already here, Fitzy. let's move on to a more straightforward matter, and that was Shamrock Rovers' 3-1 win against Harps. Jack Byrne, his free kick absolutely lit up this game early on. Then Harps gifted a goal to Dylan Watts. McAneff eventually got a third for Rovers after Carlo Sullivan had got a goal for Finn Harps. What did you make of this overall?
Probably just a bit of a formality for Rovers, really. I don't want to knock the Harps team too much. Look, Harps are always fighting. They're a good, strong team. But it was very easy for Rovers, wasn't it? I suppose it was a spectacular free kick, and that just kind of set Rovers up lovely then, just to push on. You know, there was no real intensity there in the second half too much. You know, like, it was just kind of going through the motions.
It was an absolutely world-class free kick from Jack Byrne. But the second goal Harps gave away, that's the one Ollie Horgan will be pulling his hair out. It was just so, so cheap giving the ball to Watts in that area. But as you said, it was a bit of a formality for Rovers. From a Harps point of view, they lost that game. Obviously, that would have been expected, but they would have been targeting that game tonight at home to Shelbourne.
And that's a big result.
As I said, I didn't see the game. I'm only in from work and we're recording the show now. But from reading it, obviously, Shells went down to 10 men quite early in the game. And Harps, from what I'm told, produced very, very little chances. And when you look at that Harps squad, there doesn't seem to be a real proven goal scorer in that team. Already Carlos Sullivan's chipped in with a couple, and he seems to be one they're relying on from midfield. But looking for an actual number nine, at least Shells have a player like Kilduff. You can look to Waterford now with perhaps Curtis Byrne. You can pick out players in other teams. I can't pick out a player in that Harps team that's going to go and get them 10, 15 goals.
Yeah, it's a good point you're making. I think Shells would be delighted with coming away from 3 points from Ballybuffet.
Yeah.
Any team that goes to Ballybuffet and comes away with 3 points
on a rotten night like that as well,
they'd be over the moon. But that's a huge result for Shells. Like, exactly what they would have wanted, to bounce back. Obviously, I didn't get seeing the game like yourself. But yeah, look, Harps could struggle. Harps kind of are kind of down that end of the table every year, though. It's always a dogfight for Harps, but you know, they seem to pull it out of the bag towards the later end of the season. They pick up points here and there. You know, they're a hard team to break down. So I wouldn't be just panicking too yet for Finn Harps.
No, they had an okay start to the season. Well, 4 points from the first two games. Let's move on to a team who are not used to being down towards the bottom. That's Cork City. It was another really lackluster and poor performance from the Rebels. They went down 1-0 to Bohemians with the goal coming from Andre Wright.
Yeah, I was watching this game as well, Kieran, on the streaming service. Geez, I'm very worried for Cork.
Yeah.
Very worried. I just thought that Bose, obviously, like, they got the goal. It was a very poor save, I suppose. It was nearly a gift then, a follow-up. But, like, just there was no real fight from Cork. You know, it was nearly like if someone had said to me, what team was that? And I would have guessed it was Cork City. Like, you know, it's not the City we've seen 3-4 years ago, you know, challenging for titles.
But I don't think anyone is looking for them to be that team. They're looking for a team to be competitive and to play a good bit of football. There was nothing from this Cork team on Sunday. I couldn't tell you what style of football they played. And obviously when we look at a Cork team, we see the manager's Neil Fenn, we think straight away this team's going to play a decent brand of football. But there was just nothing to their play.
Like Fenn had Longford playing a very nice, attractive style of football. Albeit we mightn't have performed where Longford's fans' expectations were, but at least when you went out to a match, you knew, all right, we're going to try and get it down. There's going to be a bit about us. We're going to be well organised, you know. But Jesus, that Cork team, I'd agree with you there. I don't know what's going on. And the problem is with the shorter season, they haven't much time to try and turn this around. No. I know, I don't want to be saying it's panic stations just yet, but their next fixture, they have Waterford away. Like, if they lose that, then they have Longford in the cup. That's fair enough, okay, like, whatever. But they have Sligo at home then after that. Like, if they're not picking up points against Waterford or Sligo, like, there's going to be huge pressure on Fenn and the players that he's brought in.
Yeah, and the players he's brought in, a lot of them are totally unproven in the League of Ireland. And the ones that do have League of Ireland experience, a lot of it's in the First Division. I'm talking about the likes of Dylan McGlade that came in there. I know Coleman has experience with, he was a small spell at St. Pat's. He didn't see a lot of football there, but he's been around the league with Limerick and Cove. So he's probably not a great example. But there's a lot of players there that don't have experience, and they don't have experience of a relegation dogfight. And this is my concern. And the goal that Cork gave away sums that up. Dylan McGlade gave the ball away on the edge of his own area. And then, as you said, it's a calamity of errors after that. Danny Grant nutmegs his man, steps inside, takes a shot. McNulty pushes his out handy right, and he tucks it away. And do you know what the worst thing about this was for Cork? Bose were really poor. They were quite poor. Yeah, even their own manager came out after the game and he said, we were lackluster. We were lacking a bit of spark on the night. And they still won that game in second gear.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Bose never really went up in the gears at all.
They didn't need to.
It seemed nearly like a friendly. It seemed like players were just trying to get minutes. Like, Cork 1-0 down, like they never really pushed up, tried to get that equaliser. Yeah. Like, it was just, look, I don't want to be hounding on about Cork, but like I just it's going to be interesting to see where they're going to end up this year.
Yeah, I'm certainly worried for them myself, I have to say. Let's move on to Dundalk against St. Pat's, and we'll be hearing from Alan Matthews a little bit later on, the assistant manager of St. Pat's these days. Patrick Hooban gave Dundalk the lead after a mistake from Pat's at the back, but 18 seconds later, Robbie Benson with a great finish, and I think St. Pat's were perhaps unlucky not to come away with the 3 points on the night. What was your thoughts?
Pat's are always one of these teams very hot and cold.
Yeah,
aren't they?
Over
the last couple of years, you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know if a Pat's team is going to turn up and just play off the park, or if you're going to pick up an easy 3 points against them. So look, it's very hard to know. Obviously, they have a couple of good signings there in the off season. Georgie Kelly there, and the likes of Benson, like, they're going to bring in serious quality. So look, it was probably a fair result at the end of the day, but I think Dundalk, like, they're dropping points here now.
I thought Dundalk were very, very poor on the night, and I know it was a very difficult week for the club and for Vinnie Perth and everyone connected with Dundalk, so I'm not going to hound them too much, but I thought at the back their passing was poor. Usually you see the likes of Massey and Gannon bombing forward, but every time they tried to get forward there was a misplaced pass. I thought Shields had to do a lot of work in the midfield just to try and keep possession. The one bright spark for Dundalk was Kolovic. I know a lot of people were surprised to see him replaced by Vinnie Perth during the game, but perhaps he just wasn't fit. So again, you can't really read too much into decisions like that. But again, Dundalk, there just wasn't any spark about them on the night.
Yeah, it's just like, but as I said earlier there, with the shorter season then as well, like, every point is nearly worth its weight in gold. Like, like, there's 2 points dropped, say, from a Dundalk point of view. Like,
and Rovers have gone in our tree.
And Rovers have gone in our tree, yeah. So, like, it's it's hard to know. Look, I think Dundalk will still be there, thereabouts, and we have a lot more to see from Pats.
You think there's more improvement to come from Pats, yeah?
Yeah, I think Pat, they were very well drilled, and I think O'Donnell is obviously, he's brought that mentality from Dundalk. He's been in there for the European runs and everything, like, you know, so he is a wealth of experience there to bring in.
Maybe you can explain last night's result, so a 2-0 loss to Derry.
Yeah, it's just, this league is crazy. This league is mental. Like, it's I thought after Pat's getting the draw with Dundalk there that they might kick on, but
especially a Derry team coming in off the back of a really poor result against Sligo.
But I think it just goes to show that anyone can take points off anyone in this league. Like, it's going to be very hard to predict where teams are going to end up, and I'd say we'll have a lot of egg in our face by the end of this.
James Akintunde with the goal, the opening goal for Derry. He's a player that Declan Devine highlighted on the show here last week, has been a huge talent coming into the league, and Conor McCormick with a really rare goal as well. But what we're going to do now, we're going to hear from the St. Pat's boss, Alan Matthews. He's going to talk us through that draw at Oriel Park on Friday night, and he'll give us a reaction to the defeat against Derry last night. So I'm delighted to say once again, joining us on Between the Stripes LOI podcast is former Longford Town boss and current assistant at St. Patrick's Athletic. It's Alan Matthews. Alan, great to hear from you. How are you keeping?
Hi, Kieran. How are you? I'm doing well, thank you.
So, Alan, obviously disappointing result for St. Pat's last night. When I asked you on the show, it was off the back of that great performance in Oriel Park. So we might start with that one, start with a good positive note. Really well-organised performance from Stephen O'Donnell's team the other night, and probably unlucky not to come away with the 3 points perhaps against the champions.
That's one way of looking at it, definitely, yeah. But I think when you look at the overall way the game went, Dundalk, in fairness to them, had a couple of chances, particularly late on in the game. I think it was Sloggett had a header, could have possibly scored. We had a couple of chances to maybe take the 3 points, but I think overall a draw was probably a fair result. What was very, very heartening from our point of view was the the application and the work ethic that was very, very evident from the lads from start to finish. So we took a lot of positives from that. And albeit, as you say, a game that we might have got 3 points from, a point certainly wasn't a bad return.
Yeah, and I had a couple of Dundalk guests on the show last week, and I was asking them if they thought their team and the top four teams in general might have an advantage over teams like St. Pat's, because obviously those teams came back earlier to pre-season, if you want to call it that. But I thought your team, or Stephen, you're both working on the management team there, St. Pat's looked very, very fit last week. You must have been pleased with the fitness levels the players showed, and was there something slightly different you did maybe in this second pre-season to the first?
It was well mapped out and well monitored. You give great credit to the players for the way they conditioned themselves and made sure in the breakdown that they were doing what they were asked to do, that they kept that motivation and that, you know, that discipline to keep a level of fitness up. Very, very difficult to keep people's enthusiasm and motivation up. Albeit you're connecting with Zoom calls and giving people programs, but the players themselves, so they came back in quite good condition. As you said, we've had a kind of a 4 week run into the season as opposed to what the clubs in Europe have, an 8 week run in. But it was a little bit of a lag time. Coach very much to the fore in managing the workload of the players. We felt that we were in good shape on Friday, and thankfully we were able to produce a performance. But the real issue, I think, and we haven't gone into it yet, was that we had to produce a similar performance and a similar level of intensity on Monday. And that's where the difficulty arose, because we weren't able to replicate the tempo, the intensity, and the pace at which we played with the ball and without the ball on Monday night as we did on Friday. But I suppose that lack of real match and game time under our belt and fitness probably showed a little bit on Monday. But certainly from a star point of view, we were delighted with all aspects of the performance in Dundalk on Friday night.
Yeah, and I know that's something Ollie Horgan has raised today in some of the tabloids. He's unhappy about the fact that Harps, I think they've got 4 games in the next 9 days or something along those lines. So we're just prepping for the show here at the moment. We were just saying it off air a couple of moments ago, it's been a real up and down start to the restart in terms of results, and that's something we might see, I suppose, in the coming weeks with teams playing so many games. There might be a lack of consistency from some sides.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, like, again, from our own end of it, we've 5 games in 16 days. And to come into that kind of schedule at any time of the season is a heavy ask. But to come into that schedule in your first couple of weeks back after a four-month layoff, it is going to be taxing, and there's going to be a requirement for a lot of players. Rotation, people will get injured, cut it, whatever you want, but there's going to be a requirement for a real depth to your squad, and it's a very, very tall ask for a number of teams to be able to come up to that. But that's what it is, and it's everybody has to deal with it. Some clubs haven't got that level of games, but over the course of this remaining games of the season, you'd like to think that we'll get up and running and we'll get into a rhythm by playing a game a week, a game a week. But certainly for the first couple of weeks, it's a tall ask. So you're going to be dependent on the depth of your squad to be able to get, you know, the best performance that you possibly can from your group match to match.
Yeah, and obviously St. Pat's have added to the squad ahead of the restart. And one player who caught my eye in that game at Oriel on Friday was Titov. Can you tell us a little bit more about him?
Yeah, it's very difficult to go and watch players now because you haven't got that capacity. But I mean, obviously with the agents that are very much involved in the game now and you're getting a lot of information, show reels and video analysis on players, way scouts, etc. A lot of work would have gone in. The people who, Stephen, myself, Patrick Craig, John O'Connor, people who we would know, working over in England and Scotland and recommending players for us, and who would identify people that would have the right character plus the right ability to come into the group. So on the basis of kind of strong recommendation from trusted sources, you've taken in David, played with Brentford, I think, for the last 5 years. He's 21. He's a Latvian under 21 international. He's found first team game time very difficult to come by. Played an awful lot with the reserve team of 23 teams. He's captained them. And on what we saw and what we were recommended, as I said, from trusted sources, we took David in till the end of the season. And his performance on Friday was very, very heartening and very good to see, particularly his last game, I think, was in February.
Mm.
And something similar with Jordan Gibson, to be honest, again, recommended from good source. And I'm looking at him and making a view. We felt that it was one that could improve the squad. It was of the right mentality and the right character to bring into the group. So thankfully, we've got them in. And it's just a matter now of them bedding in, getting used to our routine here and hitting the ground running. We did very well on Friday. They were part of a good performance on Friday. And it's now to try and replicate that on a consistent basis if we can.
Yeah, and of course, one player we don't need to ask you for a profile on is Georgie Kelly. How well have the club done to get him on loan for the rest of the season?
Oh, yeah, that's a really, really good signing. Obviously, his connection with Stephen through the Dundalk days would have been very, very, you know, very strong in being able to influence George to come to ourselves. He's only a young player, found it obviously difficult to get in ahead of Patrick Hooban at Dundalk, but he's a quality player, and we hope that he'll be able to show those qualities with ourselves till the end of the season. Again, his first start in a long time was last night against Derry. But again, it'll take him a little bit of while, I suppose, to get up to match fitness. But his conditioning, his attitude and everything is top class. And I believe he'll be a real, real plus to the group. And again, hopefully will help us to push on and give us a strong finish to what that's going to be now to the season. It really is a finish. 12, 13 games left to go.
Mm.
You're looking at a run in. So we're very excited to have got George on board. We're delighted that he's come to us, and we're looking forward to working with him between now and the end of the year, and feel that he will bring a very, very good dimension to the group.
And look, before you go, Alan, obviously you've been involved with St. Pat's for quite a number of years now behind the scenes, but in the last probably year or so you've stepped back into the dugout. You're assistant there to Stephen O'Donnell, a rookie manager who hopefully has a very bright future in the game. But obviously I was at one of your pre-season games against Longford there, and I seen you out doing a bit of work with a couple of defenders, and it just brought memories back of your Longford Town days. And how are you finding being back involved in the day-to-day, I suppose, training and coaching of players?
Ah, look, it's terrific to be on the grass. I think all football people want to be doing that. You still have the enthusiasm for it, and I still love working with players. Any help, assistance I can bring to Stephen or to the group, I'll be doing that. I'm knocking around the league a few years, so I've seen good times and bad times with players and with clubs. It's a very, very good group. It's a group that want to try and push on and succeed. And again, anything I can do to help in that regard, I'm only too happy to do it. I think the buzz of match night is something that it's in you from a young age, maybe as a football player, as a coach, and then as a manager, and it kind of has stuck with me. So as long as that continues and I have the enthusiasm for it, I'm delighted to be working, doing what I can do, as I said, on the training ground and helping out in whatever way I can, because the game, whilst it's all evolving and moving and there's a lot of new jargon in it, the principles of the game still very much remain the same, and the core principles of the game. And I think sometimes we lose that, and it's very important, I think, that you constantly look at the fundamentals. And all the good teams, they outwork sides, they look at the best sides in Europe and in England, they're the hardest working teams. Now, you've got good players working hard, you've got a real chance of being successful. So, to say, I'm delighted to be part and parcel of that group, trying to encourage and cajole these players to try and achieve what they can.
Well, Alan, it's always great speaking with you. Thanks very much for joining us, and best wishes to St. Pat's for the rest of the season.
Pleasure, Kieran. Absolutely. Pleasure. Talk to you again.
For all your industrial equipment, compressed air, vacuum, automation, mechanical and engineering needs, check out flowmax.ie, proud sponsors of Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Great to hear from ex-Longford Town manager Alan Matthews. And Fitz, I believe you actually were a ball boy for one of Alan Matthews' European games.
Jeez, I've been caught in the hop here anyway. Didn't think you were going to bring that up, showing the age here. Yeah, probably one of the earlier memories for me was probably knocking around the club there at the European Tour.
What game was it again?
The Lovitch game.
Right, very good.
I think it was actually Kenny.
Kenny?
I don't think it was Matthews.
You didn't do one for Matthews, no?
Or maybe I did, but I was mascot for the Lovitch game in flanker.
Right, yeah, no, that was Stephen Kenny's days, yeah, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah, I'm almost certain you told me before that you were a ball boy for Alan Matthews.
No comment.
Let's move on to the first division. Athlone Town 1, Wexford 3. Great result for Wexford here, a club you have a great affiliation with, Fitzy, of course. And ex-Longford men to the four here. Jack Doherty with a penalty for Wexford. Roning Manning levelled it up for Athlone a minute later. But then two goals from Kaleem Simon to give Wexford the win.
Yeah, I have a bit of a grow for Wexford, I suppose. Yeah, it was a fantastic result for them. Look, we know what Jack Doherty can do when he's on form on the night. Great goals for Kaleem Simon as well. He was a big signing for them there. He was with Longford before as well. And another player that can, if he turns it on...
Yeah, he's knocked around a few clubs now. He had time with Longford. He was with Cavantilli. He was with Athlone. He's just never really found... I think he was up here in the north as well. And he's just never really got going. But obviously, he's going to get first team minutes with Wexford. And the same with Jack Doherty. As you said there, they're two players that can turn it on. And they'll be looking at the goals
thing,
now.
Yeah, but like, this is the thing with the clubs in the first division. Like, your likes of your Athlones, your Wexfords. You know, like, they bring in these players that maybe... probably have fallen out of favour, may have had an injury or two, mightn't have got the minutes that they wanted. But like, they're players that have quality about them and have experience. So like, people might look at the team sheets there and they'd be surprised nearly who's lining out for them. Or like, a lot of clubs fans, and they'll be like, oh, we're playing Athlone this week, it'll be an easy win, or it'll be an easy win against Wexford. There's no easy games in the first division, in my opinion.
In saying that though, Athlone have to be disappointed with this, losing 3-1 to Wexford. It's a big game, probably, all due respect. Although Wexford, they might have ambitions of a playoff place, given that there's extended playoffs this year, but... traditionally, this is a battle at the bottom, and Athlone have lost the home game here to a rival.
Yeah, I suppose as you said with the playoffs there, it depends on where the Shamrock Rovers 2 or Shamrock Rovers B, whatever they're going by this time round. It depends on that, but yeah, I suppose Athlone probably would be disappointed, but they have a bit of quality there in the ranks, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do take points off teams throughout the year. I can't see them finishing high up the table now, Kieran, but definitely. They'll be a tough team.
Well, they did take points off Galway last night. We'll talk about that in a minute, but we're going to move on to the game I was commentating at for Between the Stripes on Friday. That was UCD against Longford, and in truth, Fitz, not much to report from this. It was the sort of game you'd expect to restart a league after 4 months off.
Yeah, it was very flat. I obviously didn't get into the ground, but
yeah, you had a vantage point though, didn't you?
we were able to see over a couple of the bushes. But yeah, it was the game just seemed so flat. Like it nearly seemed like it was a friendly and the league hadn't started back. There was no real bite from either team. Like a draw was a fair result. Neither team, UCD probably had a couple of chances, hit them straight down the barrel at Stacey. He didn't really have to pull off any fantastic saves. And then Longford, they didn't really create enough. There was one good chance, a low cross in for Manly, and the follow-up fell to Sam Verdon, but he just didn't get his body over the ball and it went over the bar. But other than that, there wasn't really much going on in this game.
Sam Verdon, very, very fancy indeed. But yeah, no, he tries to stick it in the top corner and when he should have just been getting a shot on target, and it's gone over the bar. And it would have been a different game if that had gone in, because that's just before half time. As you said, there wasn't a lot happening in the game. It would have given Longford a great boost. But I left the game on Friday, you know, not overly disappointed, because I thought Longford defensively looked quite well organised. They didn't create, as you said, but you have to remember they're missing their best player, Dean Byrne, who's their real number 10.
Yeah, that's a massive loss for Longford at the moment, Kieran, because going forward there, it just seems like they were just missing that spark, that little bit of link-up play, that bit of trickery there. But look, Longford have a lot of quality in the ranks there, and I'm sure they'll be very disappointed with that result.
Yeah, look, I don't want to spend too long talking about Longford, because obviously we have that game last night to speak about, and there's bigger issues to talk about in that one. But we'll move on to Bray, 0-0 against Cove. Probably not a lot we can say here, because again, Bray are a team that were in action last night. Cove, I said it on last week's show, this was always going to be a tricky game for Bray. Cove, a team that always make it hard to play against, 0-0 was maybe a result you'd nearly expect.
Yeah, it was probably two very defensive orientated teams. I don't want to say that they're not able to attack, but like two teams that you'd notify that they're very hard to break down. Always very well organised. Cove especially, it's always a trip I enjoy, but they're always a hard team to come away from.
Cove for a number of years now have really struggled for goals, because they can't just seem to get a number 9. Obviously they don't have the resources of a Longford or a Drogheda or a Bray, so they can't go out and get a Rob Manley or a Lyons or a player like that. So they're always going to find it hard to get goals, but if they can keep the back door shut, they'll pick up points, and that's what they did here. Let's move on to what was maybe a surprise result, maybe not. Galway 0, Cabinteely 2. Ex-Longford man Kevin Knight with the opening goal, and Shane Barnes, he continued his great scoring spell for Cabo.
Yeah, fantastic result for Cabinteely there. Cabinteely seemed to be the team to beat at the moment, top of the table, undefeated.
Four from four.
I personally think they're going to fall away. I hope they do, in a Longford point of view, but I don't know if...
Can I ask why you think that? Because a lot of people are saying that to me, and I raised it on last week's show. They were 6-1 to go and win the division before the restart the other night, and I said that is absolutely crazy. They've got a goal scorer clearly here in Barnes. They've got Marty Waters who'll chip in with goals. They've got some good midfield players, and they're really well organised at the back. They've got all the hallmarks of a team that can go and get promoted. Why do you think they'll fall away? Is it just the status of the club, or what do you think?
I just don't think they have enough to win the league. It's kind of hard to kind of pinpoint. I suppose like they done Longford in the playoffs last year.
Can they not go and build on that?
That's probably their aim for this year, but I just think, looking on paper, I think Drogheda have probably more quality than what Cabinteely have.
Yeah, and I wouldn't disagree with that. I've always said from the get-go here, I think personally Drogheda will win the division. I think they've got the best squad. I think Longford aren't too far behind, but performances of late haven't shown that. Cabinteely, they don't have the household names, maybe, is what you're saying. But for me, there's probably no better organised team in the division. I can't see why they can't go and get promoted.
Yeah, they're probably, I don't want to use the term dark horse, but they're probably, as what you said, there are a lot of unknowns or a lot of players that probably people wouldn't know the household names. But like, it would be great for the league to see Cabinteely fighting with a club or even two clubs for that automatic spot at the top of the table. But look, I just personally think that they're gonna drop off. This run is gonna end.
If this was the first season we've seen Cabo go on a run like this, I would agree and I'd say yeah, they'll fade away. But we've seen down the last couple of seasons, especially since Devlin went in there, they're just so hard to play against. They're so well organised. They're just a horrible team to play against. I mean that in a nice way. I don't think they'll fade away. But let's move on to what was probably the game of the weekend in the First Division. Shamrock Rovers 2-2, Drogheda 2. Liam Scales got the opening goal after a minute. A shock to see him even in the starting 11 for Rovers 2. Callan then put them 2-0 up. Then Mark Hughes was sent off for Drogheda, and somehow they've come back to get a 2-2 draw thanks to goals from Mark Doyle and an absolute rocket from Brandon Birmingham.
Yeah, it was a
crazy game.
madness. It's, I'd say for the few fans that probably got into it, it was probably a great game to watch. Look, as we said, we've had a few discussions, I suppose, me and you, off air about Shamrock Rovers 2 or B or whatever name they're going by, development team, as some people were calling it.
Leave it at the door, Fitz.
But look, Longford were probably lucky to play them when they did at the start of the season, and I think they're only going to get better as the season goes on, especially with the players, like some of the names on the team sheet there. Like, they brought Dean Williams back down.
Williams, Scales, and there was another first team player, Kavanagh as well.
Like, they're massive players for the first division. Like, we've seen what Williams done last year on loan with a couple of clubs there, and like, I just think, like, people, because they see the club, oh, it's a development team or a reserve team or whatever, that maybe they're not going to be as strong, but they have the quality there, Burke.
Yeah, and that'll be, you can see that from, there was a story before the game that Rovers were a massive price, and then when the team news came out, there was a load of money for Rovers because people seen the quality on show. So again, this is a much stronger Rovers second team than was in the league in 2014, and for me, they'll continue to pick up points off teams.
Definitely, but from a Drogheda point of view, probably delighted with the draw.
In the end, you have to be. Yeah. I mean, you have to be 2-0 down and down to 10 men, and you come back. It shows good character, and if they can go on a run now, I mean, that could be a real turning point in their season. It's something they'll look back on, perhaps.
It'd be fantastic to see yourselves, Longford, Drogheda, and Cavantini fighting it out for the top spot. It'd be great, really, for the first division, if especially with the shorter season, not as many points on offer. Every point is worth huge value. Like,
I don't think we'll see any team run away with it unless Cavantini can go and win every single game. But even if there is a team that's maybe a couple of points ahead, with the playoffs, it's going to be exciting till the end of the season.
Oh, definitely,
I think nearly every team in the division, bar maybe Athlone, obviously Rovers can't qualify for the playoffs. I think bar those two.
But with Rovers doing so well, if they do end up in them playoff spots, it pushes it down an extra spot. Yeah. So you might have your likes of your Wexford or Athlone
eyeing it up.
Yeah. Like, picking up that playoff spot, which would be huge for them.
Oh, absolutely, and you'd love to see if supporters can get back to the grounds by then, that if there is a good playoff push at any of them clubs, that they'll get good numbers out to the ground.
I'm sure a lot of people will be disappointed with the news today, just before we went on air, that it's for another 3 weeks, it's still only going to be 200 at a match. Like, I know a lot of the first division clubs were disappointed that they weren't involved in the streaming. A good few have tried to set it up themselves, some successes, some have hit a few technical glitches, but look, it'd be great to see a couple of the games in the first division streamed, and for fans to have access to watch it.
Yeah, 100%. Let's move on to another game that had 4 goals. Galway 2, Athlone 2. This was last night. Tanner Dogan, who's arrived on loan from Dundalk to Athlone, he put Athlone ahead after 22. Mikey Place, a player that would have been expected to score goals in this division when he arrived at Galway, he levelled it up after 41. Adam Lennon then put Athlone back in front before Lombotto, I think I'm pronouncing that rightly, got a late equaliser for Galway. But Galway's slow start to the season continues.
Yeah, it's Project DNA flying once again, as John Breyer would say. look, I think Galway could be, they'll be comfortable probably mid-table, but for the club of their size and the players that they can bring in and the appeal they have down there, I think it's going to be a disappointing season for them again, in my opinion.
Yeah, they just haven't got going at all. Again, you're looking towards, as I said, Mikey Place. When he came in, you were expecting him to score goals. Vinnie Fatterley didn't play in the first few games, but he played in this one, and I put the question out on last week's show why he hadn't played in the first few, and a Twitter user did get back to me and say that, personally, in his opinion, though, I can't back this up because I haven't seen Vinnie in action, he looked really unfit and off the mark. So there could be some truth in that.
Could be fake news
lamestream media. But I mean, if he's not up to the level he was last season, put it that way, and players can't hit the ground running, you're looking at the Galway team, and perhaps there's not as many goals there as we thought there would be.
No, but as we said there, I don't want to reiterate it all again, but with the playoff spots, like, Galway could easily pick up one of the lower down playoff spots, and even off the back of a poor season, and then it's really a cup final when you're coming up in these playoffs. So, like, it's hard to know, but, like, the other side of the coin is the quality Athlone have. Like, as you said,
Dogan,
yeah. They're after signing Lee Duffy as well. He's well known in the league. Like, I know he's been hot and cold at times, but, like, they have a few players there, Burke. Like, they're not going to be a walkover.
Yeah, and they've got the experience of Darren Meenan still there as well. I know what you're saying about Duffy. Obviously, he's got lots of experience, but he hasn't really settled at any club. He had a good spell at Drogheda a couple of years ago, but since then he's had his issues with injuries. But for, I suppose, a club like Athlone and the market they're in, it's a great signing for them. And Dogan coming down from that level at Dundalk is a great signing for them as
Joel,
well. And
Joel Culstrain as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Sorry for the pronunciation again.
There is little touches of quality there, yeah. And we'll get to see Athlone on Saturday against Longford, and we'll know more about them. And speaking of Longford, we'll move on our final First Division review for now. A very poor defeat last night against Bray. You want to run us through this one?
Very quickly. Look, Gary Shaw with two goals. Could have probably got a hat-trick.
Yeah, should have.
He was true on goal and struck it sweetly, but raised over the crossbar. That was more probably like the Gary Shaw that we remember. I don't want to give too much about you, Gary. But look, like, very, very poor defending. Like we all know what Gary Shaw is capable of in the air. Like, you know, and for Longford to concede a corner early on and not to pick him up, and for him to score
absolutely
a goal,
criminal.
Like,
as I was saying to you off air earlier on when we were talking about, if there's a lovely ball floated in and Shaw rises up above everyone and he thumps it into the top corner with his head, you hold your hands up and say, yeah, he's good in the air, fair enough. Yeah. The Longford defenders have watched him go from the penalty spot to the front post and flick it on, and nobody's picked him up. There was no one in the hole at the front post to defend it. It was absolutely atrocious defending. If I was Dara Doyle, and I know I spoke to him after the game, he wasn't happy with it. You wouldn't be happy with it, but to then concede a second goal, I thought McNally had a good game on the night, but he was caught really, really badly for the second goal. He allows Joe Doyle just to spin him with ease. He gets the cross in and Shaw's there to head it home again. But
like a second header, like, you know.
What I mean.
Like, you would have identified the problem after 3 minutes when the first goal went in, like, you know. So, like, it was a very, very poor. Like, Bray credited them. They deserved the win. They took their chances. Longford didn't really pressure them. Bray sat back then for the second half. Longford didn't create anything. I don't think we had a shot on target.
No, I don't think so. You heard me on commentary last night. I was really impressed with this Bray team. It was the best performance I've seen so far this season. Organised really well. Teamwork, tracking back.
Do you think it was a good Bray performance or a bad Longford performance?
It was a terrible Longford performance. Bray set their stall out early, well organised, used the ball really well. They weren't always playing short balls.
I think they were happy
to go in behind.
Longford played into Bray's strengths. They didn't really create anything. Sam had maybe one good chance. Yeah. It was a nice ball in by Grimes, and it was fantastic defending by Bray to block it. The keeper didn't even have to save it. But look, I think...
Were there a few positives in the second half for Longford?
You'd probably say there was, but I'm probably very critical, but I don't think there was. I think for Longford to be at home 2-0 down and to go out and not to have a shot on target, how could you take a positive from that game?
Yeah, well, do you know what? We'll hear from the manager himself, Dara Doyle, and then off the back of that, we'll hear from the winning manager, Gary Cronin.
I'm here at Bishopsgate with Longford Town manager Dara Doyle after their 2-0 defeat at home to Bray Wanderers tonight. Dara, a point against UCD on Friday wasn't a bad performance at all, just chances didn't fall your way on the night, but tonight your team just looked a little bit off.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about having a good start today, and we probably did have the ball for the first 2 or 3 minutes until they ended up getting a corner. And we let a man get free and he gets a header at the near post. We knew that was something that they tried. They look for a block and listen, it's come off for them. So we'd be disappointed in how that goal was conceded. They had another chance from Gary Shaw from a header which Lee saved. So we know he's a threat in the air. We get across in too easy on our left hand sides, and again we don't deal with it. We can deal with the header at the front post, our keeper doesn't, and we don't deal with it properly, and they punish us and it's cost us.
You must have been very disappointed. I mean, you know Gary Shaw, we all know Gary Shaw from his time here, and he gets across on the front post and he flicks it into the bottom corner, and it's a bad start for your team then.
Yeah, no, listen, it is. We know that we talked about it before the game and the danger that he has and what he likes to do, and that's something that we picked up with the lads and told them to be expected and to be aware, and listen, we didn't deal with it, which is the disappointing thing. After that then, like you say, I think we controlled the majority of possession and parts of the game, but we were probably lacking a little bit in the final third, or we didn't create enough chances to test the keeper, whether we got into that final third and they didn't defend it really well with a tackle or a block, and maybe we need to do better in that area to create some chances where we can test the keeper, and that's a bit disappointing from tonight.
Yeah, why do you think that was, the lack of chances tonight? I know on Friday obviously it was the first game back and everyone was a little bit probably cagey and trying to find their way into the new normal, as they're calling it, but tonight your team just struggled to create chances at times.
Yeah, they did, and listen, it's hard to put your finger exactly on what it was. I think, like you say, Rob has had 4 good chances against UCD. He's come in then tonight and he has 1 or 2 half chances. Sam has a half chance. We probably could have done better with our final ball into the box where it went out of play, I think, two or three times there in the game. So that's something that we'll work on and be better on. And we need a reaction from the lads on Sunday, we really do. It's a massive game against Athlone. We're all aware of how big it is, and it's really important we get back on the board with 3 points, because we need to get closer to Cavinteely. We really do. I know that some of the teams around us have, there's been results where they've picked draws and losses and wins up. So we need to push on, and it needs to start on Saturday, and we'll expect a big reaction from every player.
I suppose to pick the positives from tonight, second half, your team did get on the ball more and maybe cause more problems. As you said, Killian Cantwell there made a couple of great blocks tonight, the likes of Sam Verdon. But Matthew O'Brien, you brought him off the bench and he was very eager to get on the ball and made things happen. So you must be pleased with your team showing a bit of character and fight in the second half.
Yeah, no, listen, they showed character and fight. I said I can't fault them for effort. The first 15 minutes has killed us. And that's what's happened tonight. They've been two soft goals, and like I've mentioned that many times, it really has cost us. But like you say, yeah, it was good for young Matthew O'Brien to get on. He's a player with a very, very exciting future, and it was good for Matthew to make his league debut. You have Callum Warfield, another young player that's done well for us. So there's a couple of young players on there. We have other players that weren't even involved tonight but didn't come off the bench or were in the stand. So we need a reaction from them now. And I said to all the lads, it's open to see who can play now for the weekend. So we'll have a couple of sessions now midweek in the lead up to the game on Saturday. And like I said, we'll be ready come Saturday.
And final question, obviously first game back here at Bishopsgate. Pitch was immaculate. Stadium looks great, but obviously very, very few people in the ground in the current circumstances. What was it like for yourself and the players?
Yeah, listen, it's not what it was. And it does feel unnatural to a point of the way things are at times and how quiet it can be. There was a bit of noise in the stand behind us, to be fair. Some of the season ticket holders that were in there tonight, you could easily hear them because it's so quiet around the place. And it is different. Like, we're thankful that the LTFC Plus has been an initiative brought forward where games can be streamed and people can see them. And it's great for people to be able to do that while the restrictions are still in place. Because, listen, we'd love all our fans in watching these games, but the way the protocols are and the amount of people allowed into the stadiums at the moment, unfortunately, they're not allowed in. That needs to be sent in a day or two before. And it's difficult when you see people turning up on the night and they're being sent home that, listen, we can't let you in. Yeah. But that's just the way it is, unfortunately. Yeah.
Dar, thanks very much.
No problem.
I'm here on the pitch at Bishopsgate with Bray Wanderers boss Gary Cronin. A 2-0 win for the Seagulls against his former club, Longford Town, tonight. Gary, I have to say that was a really, really good performance from your team tonight. They looked really organised. You must be absolutely delighted with the team. They executed whatever plan you had absolutely perfectly.
Yeah, and look, you said it there, Kieran. They put in a great shift. Great performance overall. And I always say, and particularly the first goal was crucial, and it was great for us to get it so early. So yeah, we worked on a few things, but once we got the second goal, we thought, look, I mean, Longford are a quality side and they have really good players. Don't think they came out of traps as quick as we did, and we took advantage of that. And yeah, we were organised then to make sure we kept our clean sheet. So yeah, overall, delighted with the performance.
Everyone knows the type of player Gary Shaw is, a real hard working, honest centre forward, but a real quality player as well. And perhaps at times down the years he didn't get as many goals as he should have got, but two brilliant headers tonight.
Yeah, and Lee Stacey pulled off a fantastic save from another chance, and he got through 1-1 again, and he just missed the post. But look, come here, you're right, you know, Gary's always known as that target man. He was here, he done brilliant for us to win the league, when I was at Longford, to win the league here, and him and Dave were a great partnership. But look, it's great for us to have him here, and once he finds an effort, I'm delighted, and he put in a great shift. To be fair, him and Mick McDonald had a great old battle tonight.
Your team looked super fit tonight. First every ball, really, really physical at times in an honest manner. What do you put that down to? What were you doing over the off-season? How many friendlies did you play? Because I've seen quite a few teams in recent weeks, and I have to say, Bray's the fittest I've seen.
Well, look, come here. It's funny you should say that. Myself and Darrow are having that chat before the game, and we're going to sit down at the end of the season and have a coffee over, because we need to learn off each other. You know, we only played two friendlies, you know, and that's the way we went with it. Now there's a lot of
focusing more on training groundwork then.
Exactly, and then you're looking at the amount of games, 17 games in 12 weeks. So that's the way we went with it. Nobody knows whether it's right or wrong because of obviously the circumstances. Yeah. We already done a pre-season earlier on. So that's what we said. We'll sit down and have a chat about that and see how that went. But look, one of the things, we made a few changes, and you know, one of the reasons is that obviously to try and have fresh legs in there, because these games, you need a lot of energy. So look, I'm delighted to come out on top tonight.
Hard to pick a standout performer for Bray. At the back, Killian Cantwell was an absolute mountain at the back at times. Thompson out on the wing was brilliant going back and going forward. And the same can be said for Joe Doyle. At times, he was marking James English all across the pitch. I mentioned it on commentary. It's very rare you see two number nines marking each other. But your team was prepared to do the hard stuff tonight. They were prepared to go back. They were prepared to go forward. You must be delighted with the effort they showed tonight.
Yeah, 100%. And then, obviously, you're looking to bring in, you know, the lads that come in. Paul came in and Ryan and young Marlon made his debut tonight. And I have to say, you know, they put the shift in. But, you know, when you're looking at that and the lads are putting in the work, you know, we're in it together, you know, and you want to have obviously a chance, so everyone's going to put the shift into play. So, but you need everybody now. We've such small squads, the Force Division, the Force Division teams do. Myself, Dara, and all the managers have small squads to work off. You know, and a lot of games to play. So, we need to use the legs as best you can. But once the lads put in the effort like that, you know, we're happy. But look, sometimes you put the effort and don't get the rewards. Tonight we got our rewards.
And final question: do you feel this result tonight and the manner of the performance is maybe something of a turning point for your season? Maybe you'll disagree with me. I thought you made maybe slightly slower start than expected this season, but tonight that was all the hallmarks of a team that's going to challenge for promotion.
Yeah, look, and that's what we want. But I look at it now and it's a bit like a UK Championship League, you know, because it's shortened season. I think most clubs have a fancy at least the playoffs. So there's only a kick of a ball between the teams, to be perfectly honest with you. So. Look, we want to be up there. We look at last year, we won 3-0-3 at the start and we faltered. We got no consistency thereafter. So obviously we want to try and rectify that. And then we go in the first 45 minutes of the season, we were 4-0 down. So a bit of a freak day that. But look, you just have to, that's only one game, so you bounce on to the next one. And look, we just keep on going forward now. See where Friday night takes us.
Gary, well done. Thanks very much.
Good to see you.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by BarwinRacing.com. Check out our website for weekly League of Ireland previews, enhanced offers and double the odds first goal score matches, among other incentives, with a €30 free bet available to new customers. T's and C's apply. Barwon Racing, nobody does League of Ireland better.
Right, Fitz, let's move on to talk about the First Division fixtures upcoming this weekend, and we'll start with an absolutely massive one, Drogheda against Bray.
Yeah, it's a big game in the division. It's probably going to be one where we'll kind of see what's going to happen then later on in the league. You know, it's going to set their stalls out, but I'd be leaning to the side of Drogheda for this one, but after seeing the Bray performance, they were like Longford couldn't break them down.
Yeah, as I said, they were really, really good on the night, organised, and there were so many players that stood out. Callum Thompson out on the right wing was brilliant. Joe Doyle, he got the assist for the second goal. Gary Shaw was unmarkable at times. And Killian Cantwell at the back was absolutely phenomenal. I think he'll take care of Lyons. You look at Chris Lyons, and there's a lot of players in the division that can't mark him. He can be just unplayable at times, but I think Cantwell might have his number. I'm leaning towards a Bray result of some sort. They mightn't get a win, but I think they'll leave with a point.
Possibly. It's going to be the game of the fixtures this week anyway.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
But look, it's very hard to call it now. It's be interesting to see what way it fixed.
Yeah, I think you're leaning towards Drogheda. I'm going to lean towards Bray not to lose anyway. Just to mention that our charity bet is back this week. That'll be at the end of the show. Kindly sponsored by BarOneRacing.com. They give us a €10 charity bet, so we split that a fiver each, myself and Fitz, and we'll come up with our little bets at the end, and we'll try and raise a few pound for. We were raising for autism services in Dundalk. We're going to continue to do that. We have about €60 in the pot at the minute. We're going to try and get that into triple digits at least. But I think we might raise a few pound again for Pieta House as well, because obviously there's been a lot of talk about mental health lately, and we'd love to try and do our bit to try and support that. But let's move on to the next one. It's UCD against Shamrock Rovers 2. How do you see this one going?
Yeah, it's another tricky one. I'm probably on the fence here, like I was in UCD, but but look, it depends. It's just as you said. It's so hard to know what players Rovers are going to have.
You wouldn't be expecting Scales to hang around in the First Division. Put it that way, he'll be back up into the first team.
But it's hard to know. If Dean Williams starts for them week in week out, he's going to bang in goals there. This is another one that it's going to be very interesting. These are probably the games now that we're going to see who has that bit of quality, who has the bite, who's coming back stronger from the break.
Well, as I said, I was happy with Longford's defending against UCD. They marshalled Colin Whelan up front really well. But that's where Rovers too will have to just be careful. If they give him too much space, he could cause them trouble. And as you said there, Dean Williams at the other end, he's a guaranteed goal scorer. So that'll be a really interesting tie. Again, it's one that I'm sitting on the fence with, so we might move on. But two strikers to keep an eye on in that one. Let's move on to another interesting one. Wexford coming into this off the back of that win against Athlone, and they take on the unbeaten Cavantilly.
Yeah, it's a, will this be the one to knock Cavantilly off their perch? I don't think so, Kieran.
No, I don't think so either.
Look, I think Cavantilly are very strong there. Wexford, obviously, as you mentioned there, three goals, Jack Doherty, two from Kaleem Simon. Like, they're going in with a bit of form. It's in Wexford. You know, maybe a draw would be a very good result for Wexford.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. Wexford just want to be competitive this year and pick up points, and they have been competitive so far, and credit to them for that. But Cavantilly have that really annoying habit from an opposition point of view of knowing how to win a game one way or another.
They always seem to just have teams. They're very well organised.
Dangerous from set pieces.
It'll be an interesting one as well. I would like to see Wexford take points off Cavantilly just to kind of spice it up a bit with the other teams in the mix, you know. But I think Cavantilly should edge it on paper.
Yeah, no, I'm a bit more confident about my selection there. I'll go Cavantilly. El Clasico on Saturday, and again, this one will be streamed on the new LTFC Plus channel. So if you're a Longford or Athlone fan, you want to watch the game, you can sign up there. Check out ltfc.ie for details. Myself and Tony G will be on commentary, and hopefully we'll have no techie issues there. I know the lads are working really, really hard to get that sorted, so credit to them. They're doing Trojan work behind the scenes. But this is a must-win game for Longford, isn't it?
Yeah, this is huge. This is probably one we're probably better off not having any fans at it. I don't know, because over the last couple of years, it's been a very fiery affair. But
has it? Longford not alone.
Like, it still has a bit of bite to it. Do you not think so? You think it's gone?
It's gone. It's dead. It's not a derby anymore.
I think you're writing that loan off there completely.
I'm not writing this team off. I'm saying in the past, in recent meetings. I mean, there was a couple of 6-7-1 and 5-1 scorelines, wasn't there?
Aye, but there was still a few tight ones as well along the way.
Here and there, but overall, it's a fixture. Well, Longford have absolutely dominated.
Predominantly, it's been Longford over the last few years. But like, I still wouldn't like this is there's a lot of pressure on Longford here. There's really no pressure on Athlone for this one.
No.
Like, I know it's a derby or whatever, and Athlone would like to get the win. But like, if Longford are beaten in this one, like, it could be panic stations.
Yeah, big time. I agree. It's a massive game. As I said, you heard that interview with Darragh Doyle. Spoke to him at length after the game, and he knows himself the performance the other night wasn't good enough, and it'll be interesting just to see. I think there will be big changes, Fitz, particularly in the midfield area. I think they really struggled, particularly in the central midfield. Now, that's not a criticism against the players that played in those positions. It just didn't work on the night for whatever reason, tactically or whatever else. It didn't work. So I think Darragh Doyle will look to change.
If I was Darragh, I'd be kind of thinking, look, this is the perfect game now to go out, put down a marker. It's a derby. It's against that loan. You come away with a win here, straight away you have a bit of a confidence boost. Mm. You know, get maybe a few names on the goal scoring sheet. You know, like, it's a game that could really kickstart Longford again. But there's a lot of pressure. If Longford don't pick up points in this one,
I'd be worried.
It's very poor.
I'll go for Longford win because traditionally they do win this fixture. But as Fitzy said there, it is a huge game for the club. We'll move on to Cove against Galway. We're going to be hearing from Cove chairman Bill O'Leary after this. We're going to be speaking to him about the new streaming service that Cove have announced today. Great to see that as well. But they might be confident of getting all 3 points here against a Galway side totally out of form.
Yeah, it's gonna be a tough one to call. I think Cove in Cove are always a tough team. As we mentioned earlier there, Burke, they're hard to break down, they're well organised. But like as you said, they just lack that bit of firepower up top.
Yeah.
So look, if they could nick a goal, I think it'll put Galway on the back foot all right. Mm. But this is another one for me.
Draw written all over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's also just gonna kinda see where teams are.
Let's hear from Bill O'Leary. So I'm delighted to say, off the back of last week's interview with Drogheda chairman Conor Hoey, we've got another First Division chairman on now, and for the first time on the show joining us is Bill O'Leary from Cove Ramblers. Bill, welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Good evening.
Thanks, Kieran. Lovely. Delighted to be here. So hope we have a good chat.
Yeah, Bill, I suppose we'll start with the news today. I was on your social channels a little bit earlier on, and you're the latest club to announce plans for streaming your game. So maybe you can just talk us through that and exactly how it's going to work down in St. Coleman's Park.
Yeah, so Kieran, what we're trying to do with the streaming is, we're taking the opportunity here, which in the first instance could be viewed as being a negative one. So we're limited in terms of numbers through the gate. Obviously, we're limited there to 200 people, including players and staff. So we're using that negative opportunity. We're flipping it on its head, and we're going to actually take it, turn it into a positive. And that's very much around the ethos of how we're managing the club now. So we're developing an online streaming package, which will go out on Saturday through our YouTube channel. In the first instance, that'll be free, so it's going to be free to people that want it free. But we're asking people where possible to donate. And we see that as a good opportunity for us to appeal to a different demographic, maybe a different group in society, but also maybe regionally appeal to people as well in the greater Cork and Munster region, even further than that, and a lot of the Cove and Cork people that are abroad. So we see great opportunity there with streaming, not only for our club, but I think for the league in general. And we've seen, I suppose, the positive feedback that we've seen with Watch LOI in the Premier Division, and I think we think it's really positive for the league in general, and I think we're going to do it right here in Cove, and I think we've got a cost-effective, robust solution that will work pretty well.
Yeah, and just to recap what you're saying there, so it's going to be streamed on YouTube free of charge, but you are asking for donations. Can I ask how much of a hammer blow it's been in the last couple of days? Obviously, the FAI came out and said First Division clubs can't charge as such. Did that set back your plans slightly? Did you have to maybe play a different game then?
We did, Kieran, and we recognised the principle of why they said that, right? So, we understand that we have an agreement there that revenues from the Premier Division and Watch LOI will be shared amongst us all. And, we didn't want that allegation that we're taking some of that shared revenue and then we're going and doing our own thing as well. So we're trying to avoid that, but the notice did come late enough to us, I have to say, from the FAI. It came late last week. So it caught a few people off guard, but I think as a First Division group of clubs, we've responded pretty well. And we've worked with the LOI to come up with a solution that they're happy with, and that's really around the donation, the volunteer donation type scheme.
Yeah, obviously you've said it yourself there, you're quite happy with the stance the Premier clubs have taken, and you can understand where they're coming from, but at the same time, obviously the Premier clubs had an awful lot of assistance in setting up their streams. As you said, the Watch LOI system, it's absolutely fantastic. I watched every game here Sunday from the weekend. I sat down here and watched every game and watched the game live from Turner's Cross. It's absolutely brilliant to be able to do that, but at the same time, a lot of the clubs got a lot of assistance, whereas the First Division clubs are relying on volunteers. Some clubs are luckier than others that they have techie people within the club. Some clubs have had to go out in the First Division and buy bits of equipment that they're not cheap. So the flip side of the argument, I suppose, is that you're not really getting paid twice, if you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Look, there is, and we do recognise that the Premier Division clubs have been helped with their cost structure in this instance. But look, it's not a bad thing overall. We're not going to make a big deal about it as a set of clubs. We've worked well with the FAI in recent months, especially around the whole negotiation on promotion, relegation, and all of that. And we feel that the people that are there now are making a positive difference. It's an organisation undergoing huge positive change, in my opinion. And we're happy to go in behind that and let's all work together holistically for the well-being of football in this country. And I think if we do that, we have a great chance. For too long we were, I suppose, hampered by power struggles, individuals wanting to focus everything on themselves and all of that stuff. And I think now we're seeing now that there's a group of people, not only in the FAI, but I think in charge of clubs across the country, that are thinking more widely, are thinking more longer term, and thinking more as a cooperative, I suppose, in the way we're doing things. So as much as I think, from a cost point of view, we'd love to be able to be supported directly for people buying the schemes, but we're pretty confident that people will donate where possible, and yeah, and we'll avoid any kind of big implication and serious repercussions from the FAI.
Yeah. As I said at the start of the interview, we had Conor Hoey on from Drogheda last week, and he had great things to say about yourself, Bill. He spoke very highly of you. He spoke very highly of all the First Division chairmen and people he's working with within the FDA. How have you found that as a resource, the FDA? Do you feel that the clubs are more united than ever in the First Division?
Absolutely, Kieran. There's a great group of people there, and I'm relatively new to the party. I'm only in situ maybe 4 or 5 months with Ramblers. Been there in the background for the last maybe 18 months, but really in terms of steering the ship and driving the bus, I suppose I'm only there maybe 5 months directly. So it's my first introduction to a lot of these guys. But if you look at Niall O'Driscoll and Conor there, Conor Hoey and Niall and Bray and Conor in Drogheda, they're not there very long. And then you have the likes of of Jim Hanley and Longford and Ray Noonan and Wexford, great guys, and Larry Bass and Kevin Healy, and we're working very, very strong together. We're very unified. We know what we want, and we're not afraid to say it. And pretty strong characters there. Now, we disagree on occasion, that's fine, but I think we have a vision for what we want from the first division, and what we want from football generally. And we don't suffer from this kind of perception that we're the smaller clubs. We might be smaller than a lot of other clubs, but we won't necessarily be smaller forever, right? So we think very positively, and we're intent on growth, and we feel that working together is kind of going to benefit everyone, and so we take that kind of mindset.
As you said there, you're relatively fresh into the hot seat there at St. Coleman's Park. How on earth have you ended up in the position you're in? Tell us a little bit about your background for those of us that don't know an awful lot about Bill O'Leary.
Yeah, so I'm an operations guy, so I've worked a lot in operations on a global level, Kieran, in manufacturing, lots of responsibility, financial and otherwise, and so I'm bringing, I suppose, a lot of that that learning and that understanding of optimizing operations. I mean, running a club is no different to running a business, and really they're very similar. You have got to run a club like a business now. And you've got to make sure that you're financially prudent, that you do proper capital expenditure budgeting, and that you're not only managing the operations, but you're thinking strategically, and you're trying to meet the day-to-day needs of the operations, but you're thinking, where are we going to be in 5 and 10 years' time? And that often is a difficult challenge because you're trying to do two things concurrently. But I think we're doing it, and we're doing it well. We've got some great plans, which I can talk to you about, a bit further, longer-term plans that we have for the club. I come from Cove. I was down at Cove a long time. My father would have gone up there back in the 80s as a young fella with my dad. So great love for Cove Ramblers, a great love for Cove. And I believe, we're there to help, turn this club around and really steer it in the right direction. But whilst recognising the great contribution that everyone on a voluntary level has done over the years with the club, because nobody has an easy task when they're running an FAI club. So all of that great work doesn't go unnoticed and doesn't go unrecognised by any of us. But I think it's time for a strong change. It's time for new belief. And really, this club has to find its voice. And this club has to stop thinking that it's kind of smaller and stop thinking, I suppose, too negatively and being afraid to speak from the shout from the rooftops and be very positive about itself. I think if we think like that, you see, you have to remember, right? So Cove in the first case is like a town of 15,000 people. And you could say it's fantastic that a town that size is able to support a League of Ireland club at all. But you can flip that on its head and say, actually, we're the second senior club. Actually, we could, us and Cork City are the two only senior football clubs in the second most populous county in the Republic. So that's the way we should be looking at it, and not thinking of it too narrowly. We love our Cove identity, we love Cove, all of us, and so many of us are from Cove and all of that. Great love for the town. It's doing great things as itself. Cove as itself as a town is doing great things. It's come on in leaps and bounds in the last 15 years, but we have to think of ourselves more widely than that, as a Cork club, East Cork and Cork City, and really tap into that as well and be proud of it.
Yeah, and as you said there, Cove, it's such a beautiful, beautiful part of the world. And I know from a Longford Town point of view, it's always one of the first fixtures that the supporters look towards, because everyone loves a trip down to Cove. Some supporters stay over and make a weekend out of it. But even for the supporters that make the long trek up and down, they always get such a warm welcome into St. Coleman's. There's a lovely little bar in the ground. There's usually a bit of food put on for them as well. They're always treated really, really well. And that's something a lot of clubs could learn from. But It's been tough times down the years for Cove. There's been some dark times, and obviously the club went out of the league totally for a number of years. So just tell us maybe, Bill, what kind of situation did you inherit when you took over as the Cove chairman?
Yeah, so I mean, we recognise the improvement that people have made in recent years. So we've improved our debt profile, Kieran. We've reduced our long-term debt, and now it's at a level that's really, really, I mean, it's amongst the best in the country, I would say, in terms of long-term debt. We've really got a good handle on that, and our long-term debt is very, very small. Okay, we've got plans for the ground itself. We need to do something with our facilities. I'm part of the FAI LOI group on facilities and facilities improvement, and that's very, very key to what we're trying to do. We suffer because of the fact that we don't own our own training facilities, and we're travelling between different locations. And as a senior club, that's really not acceptable. We have a new initiative in Cove around Cove for Football, where we're sharing, where we're all involved in development. development of a bespoke AstroTurf pitch that's going to be used for all of the Cove and Cork people, and three or four clubs involved, and that's great. But that's only part of our thinking and part of our development plans. We have a plan as well to develop the facility. We want really, Kieran, to have a club that isn't just necessarily, you know, a Saturday night club or a Friday night club where people are going into the facility. We want this club to be the centrepiece of the community where people are going in there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights, and there's different activities on during the day. You know, there's mother and baby kind of events. There's a local community event where we liaise. You know, we open up our doors and we accommodate different community groups. You know, and we're working with different charities in the region to facilitate that. And we believe that's where we will get the really, really strong connection with the club. People will feel that they belong and they believe that they're part of something special. And that's when you get the really, really special stuff happening. You get the magic when that happens, because you have to really stand back sometimes and question yourself, what are we trying to do and what are we here for? You know, we're here obviously to develop young fellas and young girls and to develop their footballing skills and develop them as people, but also we're there, I suppose, to serve the community and for the community to feel like they represent, we represent them. And that's a very strong calling card, and that's going to be really core to what we're trying to do, Kieran, a really strong identity.
That's great to hear, Bill, because if you look to Europe, particularly if you look to Scandinavian countries, a lot of their stadiums are municipal setups, like you said, where they're a hub of the community. You might have a library in there and you have other services and people are coming and going from the ground, and that they're embedded with the club then, as you said. But obviously in Ireland, that's been a big issue down the years. We don't really have that type of mentality here, because obviously there's a huge rivalry between League of Ireland, GAA. Everyone's fighting their own corner. Even within League of Ireland, then you have clubs fighting their own corners, and you have maybe not great relationships between the junior clubs in the county and League of Ireland club. What's the situation like in Cove at the moment? Obviously, there's a very strong intermediate and junior scene down there. What's the relationship like between Cove Ramblers and those clubs?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very important question, and it's one that we put a lot of effort into. I think in the first case, what you have to do is make sure that you get on a personal level very well with your counterparts in those clubs. And I think you have to build trust, and you have to give these people a level of comfort that we're trying to do something together here. You know, historically, there might have been issues there. There was issues there. Let's not fool ourselves, you know, with certain personalities. And that doesn't lend itself to progress. And I think we've worked hard in the last 6-12 months to get that right. And it's strong now. So we have Cove Wanderers and we've got Springfield Ramblers. You know, one is a junior club and one then is the kiddies and you know, the underage and the girls underage. And we're really, you know, that's a strong relationship, and it should be. And what we want to really do, Kieran, is to develop, I suppose, a roadmap and a player development plan for Cove and East Cork and Cork kids, so they understand when they go to Cove, they might start off at under 11 or whatever with Springfield Ramblers, and they go up through the ranks, and then they'll come in and maybe, if they're good enough, play on a national level at under 15 or 17 level with Cove Ramblers, and then hopefully they'll go on to the seniors. But if they don't, they might take a step back and they might play with Cove Wanderers at a lower level, but they're still representing their town and their region, and they're happy. And we have to facilitate that, and we've got to think, what are we doing here? We have to facilitate the betterment of the individuals and put our individual kind of differences behind us, and I think we're working on that very much. Just coming back to the whole community identity, I really love what Bohemians are doing and what they've done. You know, some really good people in the way they've engaged with the community. You know, they have a creche, they have a library, they even have a choir, and that's fantastic. And we're, you know, we're looking at models like that. We're looking at models of best practice and the community engagement, not only in Ireland, Kieran, but on a European level. And we're thinking bold here, and we're thinking brave, and we're just going to look at what they're doing, learn from the best, and then deploy it, and obviously have our own ideas as well, and just go for it. And I think we've some great positive ideas, and that all fits into our strategy, you know.
Yeah, no, that's really, really good to hear, Bill. I was listening to a question I want to go back to. Obviously, it's very difficult, as you'll know, to run a first division club in particular, whatever about a Premier club, which has great challenges too. There's not a lot of money in the first division for clubs, from prize money, lack of sponsorship at times, lack of TV revenue, etc. At times, do you ever feel it'd be easier for clubs like Cove to take a step back? Do you ever wonder if that would be a situation? Because I was listening to a podcast recently, and I won't name the podcast, but They were discussing clubs, smaller clubs in the first division, the likes of Cove and Longford, and there were suggestions made that the likes of Cove should maybe bundle in with Cork and the likes of Longford and that loan and try and form clubs like that. And as a Longford fan, obviously I wasn't too happy with that. And from I'd like to get your reaction to that as a Cove man. As you said, you're trying to do an awful lot of work there to try and grow the club both on the field and in the community, and then you hear comments like that, it must be hurtful at times.
Yeah, it is hurtful, but we don't take too much notice of it, Kieran. I think if you start listening to the naysayers, you'll do nothing, and you'll be just kind of overwhelmed by negativity and fear, and really that's the ethos of how we're trying to run this club now. It's think positively and act positively. We've no time for the naysayers. We've 25 or 30 people now actively involved in the running of the club, and it's go forward and go forward together. Now, some of these people, you know, the so-called experts feel that, you know, some of these clubs, so-called smaller clubs, should amalgamate, or they should be removed completely. But that's negative thinking. It's too short term. I think what we have to do is give clubs an opportunity to tap into, you know, resources that I suppose have been unexploited down through the years. Like, we're trying to now diversify our revenue streams through the streaming, which I mentioned. Who knows where that will lead if we do it right? Through our merchandising and our online shop, who knows where that will lead? You know, if we do things right and we give sponsors something really positive back to what they do, you have to remember we're one of the most beautiful towns in Cove. It's a town that's in Ireland. You know, we're one of the fastest growing towns in the country. We have really strong brand in terms of the Cove brand, and you know, we're selling something beautiful here, right? And you can really, I suppose, tap into that, tap into the love for Cove, you know, when you're dealing with sponsors and so on, with so many tourists coming here. We've got to think big and go for it. And if we fail, let's say we fail and it doesn't work, well, we can't say we haven't tried. But I think if you look at the analogy with rugby for a moment, and I'm a big Munster fan and a big rugby fan, if you look back at the way rugby was being managed, you know, in the late 90s, you know, you'd be lucky to get 500 people at a Munster and Leinster game. But all of a sudden that was flipped on its head. And it was flipped on its head basically because what happened is, you know, they tried to improve the experience of people coming to the games. The facilities were improved. You know, the standard of rugby improved a little bit for sure. And then, you know, Munster were lucky in that they had a couple of years when we won the European Cup, and the whole thing just took off. And I mean, that can happen as well in soccer. And I think if you look back at the Premiership now, it's very hard for us to make any analogy with the Premiership, but just think for the moment what they did around the TV deals. You know, when they signed those deals with Sky years and years ago, they all thought for a moment, let's combine all of our thinking together in a positive way and sell what we have as one package to the highest bidder. And look how that transformed all the clubs. So they didn't think about their individual club. They thought about the bigger package, the bigger picture. And I think that's what we can do here as well. I mean, come back to my point there for a moment about the fact that we're one of the only two senior clubs in the second most populous county in Ireland. There's 550,000 people living in Cork. My God, if there isn't space for two senior soccer teams in that space, then we've a big problem. You know, and you know, I made the analogy with rugby. Let's make the analogy with GAA for the moment. You know, they connect with the hearts and minds of the supporter base and of their community. We as soccer clubs need to do the same. We need to wake up and we need to start doing that, because we haven't done enough of it on the League of Ireland level. You know, and we've thought about the guy down the road and trying to be better down the road. But why don't we work with the guy down the road and try to be better together and see where it takes us?
Bill, I could keep you on the line all day, but I'm going to leave it there for now. That's been an absolutely brilliant insight into the running of Cove Ramblers and your plans for the future. And they sound really positive and optimistic. And all I can do is wish you the very best of luck for the season going forward and for the future plans as well. And thanks for coming onto the show.
Great stuff. Thanks, Kieran. Thanks so much. Talk soon. Bye-bye.
Right, that's the First Division done and dusted this weekend, and I think most people agree this show never leaves the First Division out. We give it really good coverage every week. So if you know a fellow First Division fan that hasn't tuned into our podcast before, let them know about Between the Stripes. Let's move on to the Premier Division. Bowes against Dundalk. This is a tasty one, Fitz.
Yeah, it's going to be a cracking game, I think. I'll definitely be tuning into the streaming service to have a look at this one. Very hard to call. I don't know which way it's going to go. Like if Bowes beat the Dundalk here, they're doing Shamrock Rovers a huge favour, like, you know.
But
it'll be very interesting to see now who wins this. What do you think yourself?
Well, this is a question I actually wanted to put to you when I was just thinking about the shorter season and everything, and the fact that Dundalk have just lost a little bit of ground on Rovers. If Bowes could put a run together, they could challenge for the title, no?
Jesus, I don't know. I think, look, if anyone, I think anyone gets five or six games under the belt here, goes on a bit of a run, be it wins or draws, they're going to be up there. It really is as you said, with the short season, it's very, very hard to call. Just say, for example, there, even if Pats went in a bit of a hot run, four or five games, straight away you're pushing for Europe, with the shorter season. So, if this will be a game that Bose will be targeting to win, they won't be fearing Dundalk.
Well, Fitz, you know my connections to Dundalk, and I'm going to make a massive call here. I think Bose will win this one.
I don't want to just jump on the fence with you, but, I think I was edging towards the side of Bose. I think they'll be well up for it. They won't fear Dundalk one bit.
Obviously you should never read too much into friendlies, but when I seen Bose playing Longford, I was so impressed by them. They were really well organised, looked really fit, and as we mentioned, they beat Cork in second gear. Now, I know their managers criticised them a little bit, saying that they didn't play that well, but that's probably him just trying to poke a little reaction out of them and get them fired up for this game. They've got the quality in that team. Andre Wright is a really good, strong hold-up player. They've got Denny Corcoran to come off the bench. They've got Keith Ward to come off the bench. They've got Danny Grant, who could be one of the best wingers in the league. And they've got Anto Breslin at the back that we know about. They've got quality all over the park, boys. I think they've got a chance of winning this one against Dundalk.
Yeah, but saying all that, you've definitely probably put the blight on them now. It'll be a Dundalk win.
Yeah, that was a trend last year already. Yeah, so sorry to those fans.
I don't want to bring up the prediction game last year, but I think any time you ever went against John, it didn't go too well.
No.
So I don't know which one he's going to go for in this, but it's going to be a tasty game to watch.
Yeah, but I think even from listening to you there, you're giving Bowes definitely a little chance here.
A very, very good chance here. I think I wouldn't be surprised if Bowes got the 3 points.
That's me not getting served in any coffee shops in Dundalk this week now.
Keep the head down.
Keep the nut down. Let's move on to St. Pat's. We heard from Alan Matthews earlier on, and they take on Finn Harps, who had that disappointing result tonight.
Yeah, look, it could be one for Harps maybe to try and bounce back, get a point.
As you said, Pat's blow hot and cold.
Yeah, I've said it a few times now, and people are probably sick of me saying it the whole time, but you don't know what you're going to get with Pat's. Realistically, if they could get some consistency, as you said, pick up a couple of points,
They
could be targeting Europe, but it'll be a good game all the same.
Georgie Kelly got about 67 minutes under the belt last night in the game against Derry, and he's got a really good record against Finn Harps as well. He could just get up and running in this one. Obviously Chris Forrester is still there as well. I mentioned Titov, that looked really impressive against Dundalk, and they brought in a few other players that have settled well. I'd be confident with a Pats win here.
Yeah, it's the experience O'Donnell brings in as well there, from the European runs that he had with Dundalk, and the well-organised, the Kenny had them, he's bringing in all that, and he's seen it over the last couple of years and transitioned now. So Pats is the perfect opportunity for him to shine, to kick off his managerial career. He could bring this Pats team to big heights. But look, I'd probably have to err on the side of Pats for this one, but I don't think if Harps didn't come away with any points, I still wouldn't be too worried for them. That's the thing.
Again, as you said earlier in the show, Harps, they're going to be there or thereabouts towards the bottom, but they've been down there before. They know what it's about. They won't panic.
They have the experience of knocking around there, but it's always a dogfight for Harps, but they do wear their heart in their sleeve, and they'll batten down the hatches, and they'll be well able for it.
We should note before the Waterford court preview that a second Waterford player has been sent for a COVID-19 test today. Obviously one player showed symptoms during the week, so their game against Sligo due tonight was off. So this game might be in some doubt as well. So all we can do is talk about it in the fact that it might go ahead. This would be a huge game for Cork if it does go ahead. I mean, it's a Munster derby. They're coming in off the back of a really poor performance against Bowes. Waterford had that win against Shells. What's your thoughts if this game does go ahead?
I think for this game, or for Cork fans, they'll all be saying null and void the season, will it? look, if it goes ahead, it's a massive, massive game. It's huge, especially for this Cork side, as we said. Waterford, I was really impressed by them. I was just the link up play they had. They had that bit of spark in midfield, but they were putting in big tackles as well. I like to see players not pulling out tackles, getting in, getting the nitty gritty done as well. But if Waterford went out and bet Cork in this one, I think Fenn is under serious pressure, and these Cork players, as you said, they haven't really experienced a relegation battle. It's only a couple of games into the season, but from my point of view, it's a huge game.
And so many players coming in from on loan from the UK that don't know the league. And it's interesting you made that point about tackles and physicality. Waterford are they look like a well-drilled side against Shells, and as you said, they put in some nice crunching tackles as well. There was a few Cork players I wasn't so sure about against Bowes the other day. I thought they looked a bit soft in a tackle, and Waterford, they could be just looking at Cork and thinking that they're a little bit fragile. Let's get into these early on and see, can we make something happen?
It'd be great for the Cork players to turn around and prove me wrong, you know, for these lads that have come in. Like, it's nice to see players coming in from other leagues, coming into the League of Ireland, try and raise the profile of it, try and bring in bigger players, you know, key players here. But like, as you said, they're unknowns. We've seen it over the last couple of years. You know, you've seen players come in, hit the ground running. But like, you've seen other players, just one for example, Morgan for Sligo. Yeah. He was like the next big thing. And next thing he ends up in the League of Ireland and he didn't really do anything. So like there's a lot of players there for Cork now that, like, from a personal point of view, not even from the team point of view, like if they put in a good season, like they're probably looking at saying, right, well, like I could get signed by the likes of a Dundalk or the likes of a Shamrock Rovers. Like, I could make my way into Europe. This could be my next. Like, they're trying to rejuvenate their career,
right.
But like with the shorter season, there's no time for that. You know, Cork need to hit the ground running now. Like, if they go, I think I said it earlier, like, they've Waterford away, obviously. They've Longford Town in the Cup. All right, look, that might be a bit of a rotation. I'm sure they're probably going
to
focus on
that. I don't think they would want to lose to a first division team either, though. That would really not confidence.
Yeah, well, like, as the FAI Cup, it's around less this year for some teams, like, you know. But, like, they've Waterford away in the league, and then their next game then after that is Sligo at home. Like, if they come out...
That's a six-pointer.
Like, imagine... In 2-3 weeks' time, we're sitting here, Kieran, and they've lost to Waterford and they've lost to Sligo.
Yeah, and obviously, as I said, it's a six-pointer, so Sligo are pulling further away again. And you said they've got Junior coming in, Coughlin might start finding goals. Sligo, in a couple of weeks, you could be looking up at them and say, how did they get up there?
Yeah, it could be that, all right.
Let's move on to the next one. And speaking of Sligo, it is them. They host Shelburne.
Yeah, this is another good game, I'd say. Shelburne, look, as we said, we had a couple of question marks over a few of the players there. Where are the goals going to come from? A lot of experience. It's hard to know. I think for me personally, I'm going to have to edge on Sligo here. I just think I've been very impressed with them so far, especially with, as you said, Junior coming back in. I'm not sure, is he available for this game?
I don't think he will be. He should be soon available. 2 weeks, obviously, quarantine needed.
I think if Sligo could get a win here, it'd really kick them off again there. And
This is going to tell us a lot about both teams, because you've mentioned if Sligo win this, they're probably saying, right, we're okay. We're not really at the minute in a real dogfight down there. Let's just try and keep the momentum going and get further up that table. Whereas Shells, they suffered that disappointing defeat to Waterford when maybe they were just saying to themselves, we could cement ourselves in the top half this season. And now if they start losing a couple of games, they could be pulled into a bit of a dogfight. So I think a point here for either team would be okay. It just keeps them ticking over.
I suppose looking at it from the last couple of years, like the only team really that got promoted that kind of went and kicked on was Waterford.
Yeah.
Like if you look at it from a point of view that any team that's won the first division, say in the last 4 or 5 years, they've either ended up back down in the first division again, or they're constantly
fighting
just above the automatic relegation spot into a playoff. You know,
that was off the back of big investment, though, you have to remember.
Yeah, so like that's what I'm trying to get at here. Like Shell's probably, they've brought in a lot of players there, but like, the ongoing trend is that the team that comes up are really going to struggle with the quality that the Premier Division has to offer.
In saying that, though, I think Shells are a really well-run outfit at the moment. They're nearly essentially a full-time team. They paid their players during the off-season as well, during the break. Yeah. They didn't lay off any players. So that, I think that mentally gives players a big boost, knowing they've been well looked after by their club. And there just seems to be a lot going right off the pitch at Shelburne, so I don't think they'll be in any relegation trouble, but they won't want to lose this game.
You don't think Shells will be in the bottom two?
No, not a hope.
Alright.
No.
Who do you think will be in the bottom two then?
Cork, massive trouble. As I said, this will tell us a lot about Sligo. Yeah. I think what you've said is spot on. Harps are always going to be just down there, as hard as they fight. Just it's so hard for them. Both where they're based, obviously geographically it's a challenge, and the fact they're a part-time team and they've got so many games
to
play.
If Harps just say ended up bottom and Cork in playoffs, that wouldn't really surprise you?
At the moment I think Harps are in a much better position, but the fact that they are a part-time team
or vice versa, You think they're going to be the two?
And I think they'll have gotten two, yeah.
What, maybe three? Not too many points between them and Shells then? Do you think Shells will be higher?
I said it before at the start. I think there's a big gap between the top two, although with the shorter season, it might allow someone like a Bowes or a Pats to get a little bit closer. So you can say you've got definitely a top four or five there. In Dundalk, Rovers,
yeah.
Derry,
it's very early to call it now. We're only just back. Like teams.
Yeah, but even before the season would have started, I would have said this. I would have said you have your top two, and then you have a battle between Bowes, Pats, Derry. And then you could throw a blanket, I thought, at the start of the season over the likes of Shells, Waterford, and then you've got probably Harps, Cork, and Sligo towards the bottom.
Usually you always have maybe one or two teams that surprise you as well, and by either overachieving or underachieving. So, yeah, look, I probably agree with you there. I think Shells will find it tough, all right. But, they might just have enough there just to kind of keep themselves safe of a playoff spot.
Right, we've rabbled on enough about that one. Give us a prediction. Sligo and Shells.
Sligo.
Okay, I'm going to go for a draw. But if a team's going to win it, it'll be Sligo. Derry against Shamrock Rovers Sunday, live on Air Sport.
Big game again. Good to see Air Sport continuing their coverage.
Yeah.
I like watching it on air there. They put
professional.
Yeah, I was just going to say, they put a real professional package together. Like, it kind of irritates me a bit because you look at what RTE do then and you're kind of like, how come they can't do what? But then... Like
obviously, they're doing the streaming now, so it can't be too harsh on
them. But the streaming's only come in because of the COVID. Like, look at it this way. Like, how many years have we been harping on about maybe streaming, getting a service like this or getting more coverage for the League of Ireland by RTE? Like, I think, look, it's coming on. It's taking a step in the right direction, but there's way more that could be done.
Yeah, I just hope it's not going to be a short-term thing that this will be put to like, it. It needs to be stats and facts-based. I mean, we don't know how many people have signed up. We don't know how many people are watching the games, whether the spread-out kickoff times is helping more people get the opportunity to watch it. We won't know until we have the facts in front of us, and hopefully the facts will be put to us. It's not going to be behind closed doors decision.
It'd be very interesting to see next season, all right, if the streaming service is kept on, what the price point is going to be. Or how are they going to do it if games
are all on the one time?
They won't be staggered. Like, are you going to buy a season pass just for your team and it gets all your team's games? Like the clubs themselves off the field have been doing Trojan work, like with social media. I think they all realise now the profile and the importance of it. But still, there's a lot more to Liga 2. But I just want to give a mention to, I don't know if you've seen it on Twitter, the promo video.
I'm not gonna try and pronounce it.
I think it's an unusual second name, is it? But like things like that, like that was a fantastic promotional video put together by a fan. Like,
he might say Fitzpatrick is an unusual.
Yeah,
second.
Well, look, Lyle Amir Zaki.
Yeah,
but
how many more aliases?
Yeah, but look, like that was a fantastic promo put together for like a fan to be able to do something like that. Like, but people like that should be brought in,
of course,
like,
this year.
Look, just from your point of view, like, this is my first time on the podcast, obviously. I've been listening to it for a few years. And when you started up this podcast, it started from nothing, basically. Yeah. It was just your frustration at the lack of coverage.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously, the appetite is there with the amount of viewers that this has got and the profile that it's built over the last couple of years. You have the likes of Alan Cawley doing a podcast now as well. Yeah. Like, you have, I know you have one from, is it the...
League of Ireland Weekly?
Yeah, you have the... Is there the Shamrock Rovers one as well?
Yeah, most clubs have one. Shells have one now. Longford did have one there for a spell.
It's really taken off, like, you know, but, like, that just shows you that there is...
The potential.
There is a grow there for the League of Ireland and there is serious potential.
Yeah, but you haven't told me about Derry and Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah. I've been trying to avoid it as much as I can. No, look, it's a huge...
Derry need to bounce back, don't they?
Yeah, it's a huge game. Look, if Rovers are really going to challenge for the title, it's one that they're going to have to win. You know, they have serious quality. Like, Jesus, to bring on the subs they brought on the last day, like, it was...
And obviously the five subs rule now, it suits clubs like Rovers and Dundalk, like, doesn't it?
Yeah, who... I think they brought on Gaffney.
They've got so many options off the bench.
Was it Graham Burke as well? Like, to them two alone, to bring them in, like, off the bench, like, the huge resources there. But, like, I think, like, Rovers have probably underachieved. I know they got the FAI Cup win, fair enough, but it was kind of on the back of a decline from Cork and Dundalk. Like, they never really matched Dundalk over the last couple of years, but I think this could be... I think this is Shamrock Rovers' year.
They were 12 points clear last year at one stage.
But, like, I think this is their year to win. If they're going to win the league, this is the year they're going to do it.
Yeah.
So look, I'm gonna go with a Rovers win at this one, but I think it's gonna be a tricky game for them.
Yeah, I think Declan Devine will put a rocket up his team after last night. I think he'd really want a response. For me, if Rovers went up there and got a point, it wouldn't be a bad result, because we're talking about Bowes potentially taking points off Dundalk. As long as they can keep that gap four or five, maybe extend it even more, I think Rovers be perfectly happy with that. So yeah, I think once Rovers don't lose, they'll be happy. Let's round off the show with the charity bet. Once again, sponsored by bar1racing.com. Thanks to them, we're going to give this to a few charities if we can raise a nice sum. But Fitz, have you got a charity bet for me?
I'm not a big gambling man, because, you know, look, I think I'd probably have to go with Rovers to beat Derry.
Okay.
All right, Waterford to beat Cork. And I'll go with Drogheda to beat Bray.
Okay.
They're my three.
Yeah, that could become a double instead of a treble, obviously, with the Waterford situation. Yeah. But for myself, again, we haven't prepared here. I go Longford against that loan. They have to win that game.
Oh, come on, that's an easy one now.
I don't know. The odds would be very short on that. Drogs Bray, no, I'm not touching that. I do like the look of Bowes, and be good value about Bowes as well. I'm going to go Pats, Longford. I would put Waterford in there as well if that game is on, and I'll leave it at that. I'll go treble. I want to try and build this.
It's a tough fixture list this week. There's a lot of games there that will swing either way, and you wouldn't be surprised.
No. Fitz, I have to say, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for travelling up. And any final words for the listeners?
Oh, just I hope they enjoyed it. No, I was delighted to come on the show. It's I suppose I remember a couple of years ago you calling over to my house saying that you had the idea for it, and we sat down and we were talking about it and how to get it started and all that sort of stuff, and it's just great to see how far it's come, and the amount of listeners it has and the guests that you've got. Like, it's great for the League of Ireland. I know we don't want to harp on too much at the very end here. They're probably sick of me talking, but like, the coverage for the first division in particular, I know Longford obviously are in the first division, but like, the coverage for the first division of it is great. Obviously I work away from home as well, so I do enjoy listening to it when I'm driving, and it kind of keeps me in the loop of as to what's going on.
Yeah, and the same, I listen to podcasts in the car all the time, and there is without, you know, wanting to be trying to promote ourselves here or anything, there is a lack of first division coverage on other shows, so I think people do appreciate that. We're not a first division podcast, we're not a Premier Division podcast, we're not a Longford Town podcast, we're not a Dundalk podcast, we're not anything. We're a League of Ireland podcast. We give everyone their fair share, and we try our best to just talk League of Ireland and promote the greatest league in the world.
Viva la between the stripes.
That's where we'll leave it. Fitz, thanks for joining us, folks. Thanks very much for listening to this week's show. We'll be back again next week with more top class guests. And make sure you subscribe and share the link on social media as well. And spread the word of Between the Stripes and the League of Ireland.